So having said all that, when Bob claps his hands over here, he's a moving source, okay, so he's drifting back like this. He claps his hands to send a signal back to Alice. With what speed does Alice measure that sound wave coming at her? C. At what angle do I draw this guy coming back?
45 degrees in the opposite direction.
Excellent. Okay, that's super important. This angle here is really important. Okay, so we got that. And what else can we do in this diagram? Well, we're going to add a few more details to this diagram. In fact, we're going to add some distances and velocities and all that stuff. So Bob is moving with some velocity to the right. Okay. Now let's suppose that that when Bob receives that sound signal, he has covered a certain distance d in Alice's space. Okay, so he receives the sound signal when he has traveled a distance d. So that's a d sitting there. Okay, so if this distance is d, and that's 45 degrees, what is this distance? D. Okay, this is also D. This diagram is getting a bit messy. That's very important. Okay, notice how convenient this is. Because we're measuring x, we're measuring space and time both in meters, like c times t. This is in meters, that's in meters. Okay, so if that's D and that's 45 degrees, that's D also. Okay, D meters. What about this guy over here? Also D. Okay, so we got that. And what else can we add to this diagram? Well, let's find an expression for D. Yeah.
So a little bit of like time passed between the return clap. Like, wouldn't it not form a perfect triangle like that?
Because of the time it takes Bob to process?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're ignoring that time. So in other words, or another way to think about that is Alice claps her hands like this, sends the sound wave here, and Bob just has a big board here, and it just reflects off. So there's no thinking time involved. Or we think Bob is a superhuman thinker and he can just bang instantly. So there's no time delay. All right, so we got that. So let's talk a little bit about the relationship between this distance and this velocity. Okay, so we know that distance d is velocity times time. So what am I going to put for velocity? V. What am I going to put for time? Think about this. Look at this picture. Bob started at Alice's location. By the time he received that sound signal, he had traveled a distance d. How much time has elapsed for Alice? How much time does this... So Alice reckons that Bob receives that sound signal when he is located a distance d from her, and a certain amount of time has elapsed for her. How much time? Yes. So it's this time over here. So Bob crossed her path, and he moved the distance d. How much time did it take? Well, this whole time. Okay, so it's ct plus d. Okay. But that's c times the time. I need to divide by c to get the time. Okay. So we've got that. So here, in this formula here, there's a d there, and there's a d there. And what you can do is you can solve for d, and I'll leave that as an exercise for you to do. So, in fact, what we want to solve for is the ratio of d divided by ct. And so what you get is v over c divided by 1 minus v over c. Okay, so I won't go through that simple algebra. You can do it later on tonight if you want. This is a very important equation, which we'll use many times. Okay, and this we'll call equation number 1. All right. And finally, we get to the really important part of this figure. And that is, how much time elapses for Bob from the time he passes Alice's location to the time that he receives the clap? Okay, remember, Bob is drifting across Alice's frame. As soon as he drifting past Alice in her space, as soon as he passes Alice's location, he zeros his clock. Time is ticking for Bob. Tick, 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 tick. That sound wave comes and hits him. Dunk. And then how much time has elapsed on Bob's clock? So according to this diagram, how much time is that? Here.
D plus CT.
Sorry?
D plus CT.
Yeah, so it just seems to be this, right? D plus CT. Okay. But that's assuming that when 1 second elapses for Alice, 1 second elapses for Bob. Okay? But we're not sure about that anymore, right? Or maybe not sure about that. Okay? And in fact, when Bob is moving relative to Alice, when 1 second elapses for Alice, it's not necessarily true that 1 second elapses for Bob. Okay, so we actually don't know how much time elapses without making the assumption about universal time, that when 1 second elapses for one person, 1 second elapses for everyone. Okay, so in fact, what we'll do is we'll just say, well, we don't actually know what it is, but we do know that it's proportional, say, to this time. Okay, how do we know that? Well, let me just draw this diagram a little bit bigger. Okay, so Alice waits a certain time, CT, and then she emits that sound signal, which travels to Bob at 45 degrees, and we're interested in how much time elapses on Bob's clock. Here's Bob's clock, tick, 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 tick. Okay? Well, suppose we don't make the assumption of universal time, but suppose we don't make the assumption that it's simply this amount of time. Okay? If we don't make that assumption, one thing we can assume, though, is that it is proportional to this time. So it's some proportionality factor, some proportionality constant k times ct, where k is an unknown constant, which we will determine. Okay? And why is it proportional? Well, suppose that I were to double. Suppose that Alice were to, instead of waiting a time ct, suppose she were to double that time and wait a time 2 times ct. Okay? Then that sound signal will go at 45 degrees. And it's pretty obvious that if you double this guy from here to here, you're going to double this guy from here to here. So whatever time elapses for Bob, it's going to be proportional to CT. We don't yet know what that proportionality constant is. Okay, so this K is an unknown proportionality constant, which will clearly depend upon the velocity. Okay, and we're going to try to figure out how it depends upon the velocity. K is directly related to the Doppler shift. In this experiment, it's also going to give us some deep insights into the nature of time. All right, so let's try to figure out what k is. Okay, where's the eraser? Well, they're all up there. All right. So we're going to determine k through two different means. Yep. CT and the angles. Do you mean this angle here?
Yeah, because like, didn't we say that it was 45 degrees from with the sound signal?
Yeah. Oh, I see. So this is 45.
And then that alternate interior is 45.
Oh, I get you. So you know this guy, you know that's 45. So this is 135 or whatever. And you know this angle and so on. So you can figure. So then you could apply some trig identities.
Yeah.
To figure that out. Excellent thinking.
Why don't we do that?
Okay, so what you're saying is I got a triangle like this. You know, if I know this side, I know some angles, I can use sine of this. Or sine of this angle over this side is equal to, and all that kind of stuff, right? Okay, so all of those relationships that are satisfied by that triangle assume that the space or the picture in which you're drawing this has a certain geometry. Okay, so all of those properties are true if I'm plotting, say, x versus y. If I have a triangle in space, two-dimensional space, then yes, it's true that, or let's say Pythagoras, simpler thing, Pythagoras. Then it's true that, you know, this squared plus this squared is equal to that squared, right? And all of those sine laws and cosine law and all that are based on Pythagoras' theorem, the fact that this squared plus this squared equals that squared. Okay, so in other words, space, two-dimensional space has a certain kind of geometry. Okay, so you're assuming somehow that geometry also applies to space-time. If I were to replace, instead of plotting x versus y, if I were to plot x versus ct, you're assuming that we still have Euclidean geometry. You're assuming that this squared plus this squared equals that squared.
Right, and
that's not true.
In special relativity, is that not true?
And that's not true.
Okay.
OK? Okay, so it is true that space-time does have a geometry, but it's not Euclidean geometry. Okay, it turns out that this squared is not this squared plus this squared; it's this squared minus this squared, and we will get to that. So space-time does have a geometry, and that's an excellent point, but it's not the geometry we're familiar with. But we will discover what that geometry is and talk a fair bit about it. Okay, so one way that we can determine K is to make the assumption, Newton's assumption of universal time, or absolute time. Okay, by universal time, that means when 1 second elapses for Alice, then 1 second elapses for Bob. Okay, regardless of Bob's motion relative to Alice. Okay, so if that's the case, then what is the time for Bob? Ct plus d divided by c. Okay, so what we know then is that ct plus d divided by c, that's the time for Alice here, and that's also the time for Bob, which we set equal to k times ct, according to this picture here. So we're saying that that is equal to that. So on the right-hand side here, we have kct, k times ct. Okay, so let's divide both sides. Let's take this c out here. Oh, I'm sorry. We've already taken this. We've already taken the c out. Where's the tracer? It's just kt. Let me just do this properly. So what we're saying is that d plus ct is equal to kct. Okay, so now dividing both sides by c, what we get is, and solving for k, we get, let me write it this way. Okay, just dividing both sides by c, we get this. Yeah. Okay, so this is equation number 2, we'll call it. Okay, so based upon, so far, this picture is just all common sense. Okay, so there's nothing fancy happening in this. We're just dealing with sound moving in air. Okay, and we get we had equation number 1 over here. So this is a simple equation. Equation number 2 here is based upon the assumption of an absolute or universal time. Okay, so now we have this equation, and this equation involves k, and it also involves d. Okay, if you look at this equation, equation number 1, that involves d and t, and basically we can plug that equation into that equation, and we can solve for k. Okay, so the result is, I'll let you do the algebra there. So if I combine equations 1 and 2 and do a little bit of algebra, I find that k is equal to 1 over 1 minus v over c. Okay? And so we see that k indeed depends upon the velocity. There's the velocity. And in fact, it depends upon only the ratio of Bob's velocity relative to the speed of sound. Just the ratio of this dimensionless number v over c. Okay, so let's try to understand how this k is related to the Doppler shift, because I claim that it is. It's essentially the same thing. Okay, so let's try to make sense of that. So we will do another sort of thought experiment here.
That Bob could never reach the sun, or that we would have
That's right. So if Bob goes to the speed of sound, then K goes to infinity. And if Bob exceeds the speed of sound, then K starts at minus infinity and then starts decreasing again towards zero, through negative numbers. We will see that the Doppler shift is related to 1 over K. So, but yeah, that's a very important point. Whenever you see any kind of formula or expression, look for places where weird things happen with that formula. So in that formula there, when V is equal to C, weird things happen. Okay? And it's important to understand what those mean. Okay, so here's the experiment in space. Okay, so here is Alice's x-axis. Okay, so space according to Alice. And Alice is at rest, as usual, in her space. And Bob, as usual, is moving in her space to the right with some speed v. Now, what we're going to do is we are going to allow Alice to send a sound signal, a tone, okay, just like a siren from an ambulance or whatever. She's sending a tone, like, and sending it over to Bob like this. Okay, so she's singing to Bob. Okay, so she's emitting this sound wave, which is moving with a speed c towards Bob. Okay, and these are successive crests of that sound wave. Okay, and those successive crests are being emitted with a certain frequency. Okay, so let me just sort of expand that here. Okay, so there's some frequency according to Alice. So Alice is saying that, you know, when I'm singing la, then I'm sending out these sound waves at some frequency. They're coming. The wave crests are coming out of my mouth at a certain rate. So many wave crests per second. So what is the time between the time on Alice's watch between those wave crests? If the frequency is FA, what is the time between those wave crests? 1 over. Okay, so let's draw Alice's world line, which is this guy up here. Okay, so that's time. Actually, let's just drop the C for a minute. That's time according to Alice. And here is Bob. Bob starts initially some distance away from Alice, but he's moving with respect to her. Okay, so that's Bob's axis like this. Okay, and so we are going to look at the emission of two successive wave crests. The first one here is emitted and makes its way over to Bob at the speed c. Okay, so here's the first wave crest emitted. It makes its way over to Bob at a speed c, so this is 45 degrees, and then eventually it catches up with Bob, and that wave crest washes over Bob. Okay, we'll look at the second wave crest, which is moving like this. The time elapsed between the emission of the first wave crest and the second wave crest, according to Alice, is TA, which is just 1 over the frequency. Okay? That second wave crest now travels toward Bob, also at 45 degrees, and it hits Bob. Now the question is, what is the elapsed time for Bob here? What do you think? If the elapsed time here is TA for Alice, what is the elapsed time here for Bob? Yeah? What? K times TA, right. So what that factor K does is it allows us to convert elapsed times for Alice into elapsed times for Bob. So the original picture looked like this, where we had some CT over here, and then this becomes KCT. So basically, whatever is here, you multiply by K to get that time. Okay, and so that'll be true also for take this interval, multiply by k to get that interval, just like we took this interval, multiplied by k to get that interval. Okay, so TB here is just going to be equal to k times TA. Okay, so let's see. So what does that tell us? So what is the frequency according to Bob? How is it related to T according to Bob? 1 over TB. Which is 1 over k TA, which is 1 over k times 1 over TA is just FA. So in other words, the frequency with which Bob hears that tone coming from Alice will be related to the frequency that Alice measures by this factor, 1 over k. Okay, so 1 divided by k, there's our k, is 1 minus v over c. Okay, this is the usual Doppler shift. How many of you have studied the Doppler shift in your classes? Okay, so about half of you. So I want you to think about this. So what it's saying is, well, first of all, when v is 0, then the frequency according to Bob is the same as the frequency according to Alice, which is obvious. Alice is singing to Bob here, and Bob is at rest, and he hears the same frequency. But if Bob is drifting away from Alice, okay, then he's going to hear a lower tone. Okay, it's like that siren moving away. So the frequency is going to be lower. So as we increase v, 1 minus v over c is going to be a number less than 1. Okay, and the frequency according to Bob is going to decrease. He's going to hear a lower and lower tone. What happens as v approaches c? What is the frequency according to Bob when v is equal to c? 0. So when v is equal to c, we have 1 minus 1 is 0. So the frequency according to Bob is just 0. So if Bob is moving at the speed of sound away from Alice, then that whatever Alice says to her, says to him or sings to him, the frequency gets shifted all the way down to 0. And what if Bob exceeds the speed of sound? What if he's going to say twice the speed of sound? Then we get, what do we get? If v is twice the speed of sound. Yeah, so we get 1 minus 2 is negative 1. So we get the frequency according to Bob is negative the frequency according to Alice. What does that mean? So basically, Alice will say some stuff to Bob, you know, oh, Bob, I love you, while he's going away, right? And then that set of sound wave patterns is now in the air, and it's moving like this at the speed of sound. Okay? If now Bob happens to be moving at faster than the speed of sound, he will see those sound waves go this way relative to him, and he will hear it in reverse. He will hear her talking backwards. What is it? What do you, I love you, when you say that backwards, what does that mean? He's got to get his speed right. Okay, so what time are we at here? Oh, okay. Okay, so what I'd like to do is, well, maybe we should just take a break here because, and we'll do this tomorrow, because it's already 10:30. Yeah.
I understand that if you were to observe the sound wave, he would see like the reverse of it, but the sound wave would never reach him. Yeah, so how would he hear it backwards?
Okay, well, let's suppose that Alice has been, well, it depends. It depends on, say, here's Alice, and she emits this chunk of sound. She starts talking, yak, 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 and then she stops talking here. Okay, and this chunk of sound is moving like this.
And Bob comes from behind.
Yeah, so I'm just saying that let's suppose that Bob is such that, you know, suppose that he's moving at the speed of sound, and so and he's at a certain distance from her, so that he's sitting here. Okay, so that chunk of sound is moving like this, and he's sitting right in the middle of it. Okay. Then if he moves to the left of it like this, then he's moving at less than the speed of sound, and he will hear it just lower in frequency, but the correct way forward. If he's moving faster than the speed of sound, he'll be moving relative to that clump of sound. He'll be moving to the right, and he'll hear it faster. So I'm just imagining that Alice has, in fact, you know, said this repeatedly over and over and over again to Bob. And so her sound waves fill all of space as a repeating pattern like that. And then he can move either forward or, you know, faster than speed of sound or less than speed of sound. Yeah.
If you say in the middle of the sound packet or whatever you call it, and he's moving at exactly the speed of the sound.
Yeah.
The formula says that the frequency would be 0.
Right.
But he'd be still be hearing something. Wouldn't he be hearing that same sound?
Over and over again.
Yes. Well, think about that one. So we've got this wave, and this wave is moving to speed c, but Bob has caught up with it, and so it's just sitting here. So Bob is just sitting here at rest, and there's this pressure wave around him. This is pressure. So he's in a region with slightly higher pressure than average. But it's just static. If I were to take, like, you know, a box and stick it over your head and pressurize the box a bit, hold it there, you're not hearing anything, right?
Yeah.
And then if I, you know, and then if he moves slowly from here to here and now moves at the speed of sound, it'll like having, it will be like a lower pressure. It'll be like having pulled on the box a bit. And so his, you know, his eardrums are pulled a bit out. But yeah, it's zero frequency. His eardrums are no longer vibrating.
I'm running faster than the sound. The sound will never hit me.
Yeah, but let's imagine that the sound Alice has been yakking for a long time, and the sound fills basically from this point all the way forward. Sound waves fill the entire space, and then Bob comes along. Okay, yeah.